Hello, and welcome to episode 87 of Shelf Love, a podcast that unpacks romance novels with nuance. In conversations with scholars, readers, and other experts, Shelf Love contextualizes the popular romance genre within the broader critical discussion of identity, culture, and love. I'm your host, Andrea Martucci, and on today's episode, I am joined once again by the one and only Dame Jodi Slaughter, back again for part two to discuss safe sex in romance novels. We'll finish discussing the research published in 2000 about if reading romance impacts condom usage in real life, and then I'll share some Twitter poll results from the community about condom usage in the last contemporary romance they read, as well as some results on where folks learned information about safe sex. What's your guess on how many were impacted by media, including romance novels? And while we don't get prescriptive, Jodi and I do brainstorm some ways to incorporate less commonly covered aspects of safe sex and sexual health in romance novels. Open your minds to the possibilities! If you haven't listened to episode 86, you probably want to take a listen to part one of this conversation before diving in. But make the best choice you can make, okay, sweetie? I asked this question on Twitter. It's a bit anemic as far as my polls go in terms of results. I only had 55 votes. It's, you know, I had to.
That's a good sample size. I mean, you know, moderate.
I expect better from my Twitter polls. But anyways, I asked, think of the last contemporary romance novel you read that had sex scenes. Would you describe the sex safe with regard to pregnancy, STI prevention, or testing, etc.? Who was the more active, quote-unquote, initiator of the conversation or practice of safe sex? And then I had more detail kind of talking about, okay, look, this is context-dependent. Whatever makes sense for these people. There's, you know, caveat, caveat, caveat. The four options that were presented were safe sex with a female character or a femme character initiating, safe with a masculine character initiating, safe with a non-binary character initiating, and quote-unquote, unsafe sex. And I characterized unsafe sex as at least one instance of something that would be considered risky in terms of STI prevention or like unintended pregnancy. Okay, so as is completely expected, 49% of people said that the last contemporary romance they read, the sex scenes were safe, but the masculine character initiated. So the largest category was safe sex with the masculine character initiating, which is as expected. And I'm honestly pleasantly surprised by the high percentage there.
Yeah.
In terms of safe sex, about 75% of the responses were quote unquote safe sex. One response had a non-binary character initiating, and then about 24% with a feminine character initiating. If I think about romance novels I read with low grade safe sex, think about how many romance novels you've read where it's kind of like the crinkling of a foil packet tearing a condom packet open with their teeth, or he slipped on a condom. There's a lot of like...
Sorry, my first thought is like a banana peel. I don't...
The floor is just littered with tied off condoms and he's just like roller skating.
Oh my God. Sorry, I don't know why. Okay.
Oh my God, the visual image I have in my head. So like, I feel like most contemporaries I read do mention condoms or something like that. Or, I mean, I want to say mostly condoms. It's mostly condoms or like, I'm on birth control. And I feel like particularly in heterosexual relationships, I would posit that the majority of like cisgender female character initiated safe sex conversations are birth control related, at least in my experience.
Yeah.
Reading where it's like, I'm on birth control, let's go for it. And we talked before this about the dreaded word clean.
Yes.
Is often used.
Love that word.
Yeah. So the context this often comes up in is like, I'm clean, are you clean?
Yeah.
Now, Jodi, if anybody is kind of like, wait, what's wrong with clean? What is wrong with using the word clean in this context?
I think clean is the... It's the implication that someone having or who has had an STI is dirty, which just adds to a stigma surrounding like morality and all kinds of awful shit when it's really just someone who has a sexually transmitted infection. They're not like a dirty person.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right. It's the same way that there is obviously social stigma about this, but for the same reason that it is not cool to stigmatize somebody who gets pink eye.
Right.
Or there's probably not a ton of social stigma about pink eye unless people think you don't wash your hands after you go to the bathroom.
No, people are like poopy eyes, you know.
But also, again, like other medical conditions, either infections or medical conditions people have, like diabetes. Living with diabetes also is stigmatized. Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But for the same reason, it's kind of like, hey, shut up and stop being a jerk. Same thing.
Exactly.
So 25%, though, said that the last contemporary romance had quote-unquote unsafe sex, which is shockingly high. I do want to say, I didn't ask what year these books were published.
I think even if they're recent, I don't think that's shocking to me. A lot of the, okay, first of all, I'm like deeply more problematic than you. But whenever I delve into dark romance, for instance, and we're talking about like organized crime type stuff or whatever, I think there are a lot of books that are just like, we're gonna fuck. And oftentimes the cis woman character is not on any birth control, and that doesn't matter to her cis male partner. Sometimes it matters to her, sometimes it doesn't. Condoms are not really used because it is often a claiming type of situation. It is often a heroine who is, if not a virgin, often as close to virginal as possible. Or it'll be these two characters who, like, if we're talking about like On the Edge of Love, these two characters, it's simply just not on their minds. You know what I mean?
Because they're like in a very dangerous situation.
Yes, exactly. If you're having a life-affirming sex where you're like, we might die, I imagine the last thing on your mind is...
You're like, we'll figure this out later if we manage to survive.
So it's often scenarios like that. So I would say I'm not super surprised. I think the number is probably low.
Okay. And that could be reflective of the 55 people who are my Twitter followers,
right,
probably.
Exactly. I think that's very much.
There's a sample bias or whatever. Okay. So at the very beginning of this conversation, I was like, I wanted to talk about this with you for two reasons. And I said one of those reasons, it was this study that I was looking for. The second reason was I had just read To Be Alone With You by Dame Jody Slaughter.
Oh, hi.
Which has a really fantastic, in my opinion, handling of safe sex, which I'll get to in a moment. So that was the last thing I had read. So it was like fresh in my head.
Okay.
To Be Alone With You by Dame Jody Slaughter, in which the characters have a conversation about STI tests and not only say, here are the results, show each other the goddamn documents.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. So this is the first time I've done that in one of my books. I think it's important to me to be like, if we're going to have the conversation, let's go ahead and show the proof. You know what I mean? Now, granted, these two characters do not use a condom in this scene.
Yes. I do remember when they talk about having sex, do they say something about no barriers between us?
I'm one of those people. I'm like, I don't know.
Who could
Maybe,
say?
I think it's very possible because here's the thing. I agree with the thing about it's not so easy always to separate fantasy from reality, especially if we're not examining it. As someone who does examine it and as someone who recognizes that I do also have filthy little kinks.
You're allowed to have your filthy little kinks.
I'm really trying to use like tamer words because I don't want to say barebacking on your podcast.
You just did it though.
But do you know what I mean? And also, it is very possible that I didn't say that because sometimes I'm just like really cheesy. But I think what I mean to say there, particularly no barriers, I think what I was shooting for, this is a ridiculous thing to do as a writer, to be like, actually, I should have written this instead. Not barrier in the way of like, I don't want emotional, but literally in the physical of like, I want to fuck you raw. I want to.
That might be what they have said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was going for because it does feel different.
But, you know what I mean? But I think, sure. No, I get you. I think that in the context, I would call it safe sex though, because first of all, they have literally explicit conversation and showing of test results in terms of like STIs. And then I believe she's on some sort of like hormonal birth control or something. So that's okay. Like in the context of their relationship, everybody's comfortable with it and everybody knows they have an explicit conversation about what they're doing, what they're comfortable with, et cetera, beforehand. Cool. I loved it. I have never seen people produce test results in a romance novel before.
I feel like I have, but I don't remember exactly.
I loved it. I loved it.
Thank you. I mean, I'm
inspired.
I'm very glad. I mean, I just was like, this is natural for these two characters. I think often in my books, I kind of just don't have the characters going into depth and detail about their sort of sexual past. Not that either character is super ashamed of it or anything, just that they're just like very intensely focused on what's happening right now. I do know that in White Whiskey Bargain, there was a point where Hannah was like, okay, well, you can't be fucking other people. Mm-hmm. But they live in a small town and there are politics involved in...
It's not sex shaming. There's like a legitimate reason.
But in To Be Alone With You, these two characters did actively both, I think, together and in their heads talk about... They're not straight people. They did actively talking about like their sexual histories, sleeping with other people. And I did think that for these characters, they would be two people who would regularly... get STI tests. I don't know that like Hannah and Javier would be. Well, largely just because there's no Planned Parenthood in Harlan, Kentucky.
So what you're saying is that you actually thought about the context of these characters' lives, both culturally and like situationally in the story, made different decisions?
I try to, because I do think when we're talking about safe sex and we're all talking about like how we should be getting tested every 6 months and every time we change a partner and all this stuff. And I do think about, I don't know this for certain, but someone, my grandmother's age, I'm not sure. I know that she slept with more than one person. I can't say for certain that she ever got an STI test. Not that I'm saying go her, but... But I do think that we are not in this sort of world where we all have the same sex education and we all have the resources to do that.
Or access. Like sometimes it's financial access and sometimes it's like literal. Is there a place where I can get this done?
Exactly. Most of us know about condoms, birth control. I know who my friends are, who are people who live in a blue dot city.
They live in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, they live in Austin, Texas. Louisville, Kentucky, which is, it's fine. There's one Planned Parenthood here. But there are places you can go. There are resources, and they do tend to be people who, like, do have the money access to pay to go get these panels done. But even there are plenty of people I know who, like, have never had an STI test. And I'm not going to walk around being like, you need to do this. I'm not the judge of your, I'm not the pussy police or whatever.
Aren't you the safe sex police?
I'm not the safe sex police. But I also understand that what we can do is we can educate people. But people are going to do what works for them. People are going to live their lives how they're going to do it.
So I'm going to say the thing that I always say. Different stories have different contexts, right? Like, there are reasons why characters do different things based on their context. What is more concerning is that zoomed up, eagle eye view of the genre, where if we see certain trends repeated over and over again, it's most likely not because 100% of those scenarios were scenarios where it did not make sense for the character to do a particular thing. It's usually because the genre... is influencing itself. The way the genre has written about things is influencing what is written after that point. And that's all kind of reflecting our social attitudes about these things. It's reflecting the individual experiences of the authors, some of whom grew up in different generations or locations. And then obviously we have youngins like you and Evil Prince Jack Harbin.
Wow.
Everybody's experience is kind of different based on where you grow up, your family, your friends, et cetera, et cetera. But like literally you're growing up in a different world than the world that even I grew up in. And I'm not even that old.
Are you sure? Turtleneck on right now.
I made this turtleneck. I sewed this.
That's even cuter.
So yes, my question is always just like, are we making these choices? Are we seeing these choices made purely just because that's the right, quote unquote, right choice for the characters, the book, whatever? Or are there these genre conventions? Are there these influences by society at large that are saying your cisgender female character should not be too active in discussing this.
Yeah.
Or this is the sexual script and this is how it goes. And we don't want to get too yucky talking about STI tests. They're just going to say, I'm clean.
That's exactly what it is. I think it does have more to do with genre convention. More to do with, and I know you're going to hate it when I say, like, the fantasy of it all. Even those of us who are... who are interested in writing romances that break away from the, you know, we talk about like fantasy as we have critiqued it, as I've critiqued it with you, as the billionaire fantasy and why that's not great. The fetishization of wealth and whiteness and all of those things. But there does exist a fantasy in romance where you can have, for many people, where you can have sexual encounters with people. And it doesn't have to fundamentally change anything about your life through pregnancy, through STIs, mm-hmm. not just because of like hashtag true love, but also because there are societal stigmas attached to STIs. There are societal stigmas attached to teen pregnancy or unintended pregnancies, so much so that like people who do have STIs don't get to so openly share their stories because mm-hmm. people judge them, whether or not it was because they had one thing with someone and that someone betrayed them, or they just made an accident and were not
made an accident.
And
Jody, I think what you're hitting on here too is the more that there is this stigmatization against talking about it, the more this perpetuates, because if somebody is scared that they can't have an honest conversation about, oh, I have gonorrhea, and like, here, let's have a reasonable conversation about what that means and what it looks like. And honestly, I do not know the details of this, otherwise I would literally say it right now, but like, here's what we can do to prevent transmitting it, and like, here are times when we should or should not do certain things. Like, you can have those conversations and engage in like safe sex with somebody who has an STI. But if you're scared that the person on the other end of that is going to immediately shut down and have certain ideas about you and your past and all of these things, that does not encourage safe sex, or it's depressing for the person and they feel alienated.
Exactly. And so take that. So this one character who maybe does have herpes, mm-hmm. who would feel alienated, take that as a writer. And in this genre, when you are constantly having to think about how are people going to judge these characters, you have to think about that with every genre, everything you write. But in romance, I think it is a very specific type of judgment. And the conventions that we all still have, like as a society, and how we as readers view people with STIs or unintended pregnancies. Do readers at large, are they viewing these people as worthy of love and good sex and romance? I don't know that we are. Because I think that this stigma is not just, it's not just dirty. It's also like immoral, whatever mm-hmm. the fuck that means. It's also deviant and all these other, like, we're at a place where in this genre, it seems more realistic that we can have a character, a main character who is a love interest in a romance novel, who is a literal serial killer, and who finds love and romance and good sex, then have a main character in a romance novel who is HIV positive and has the same things.
So according to 2018 data, 1 in 5 people in the United States probably carries a sexually transmitted infection, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And yeah, you're more likely to find a billionaire in the romance genre than somebody who has an STI. And so then what we're talking about then is erasure. I know that there are romance novels with characters with STIs, but they are very few and far between. If the vast majority of characters that we encounter just happen to not have an STI, and either because they explicitly discuss it or it's not discussed and we assume that they don't, that too, then creates further stigma, because exactly as you were talking about, people who are worthy of love that I read about in romance novels don't have this issue. I don't know if most people know. I certainly did not know until I just looked it up that 1 in 5 Americans likely has an STI.
That's a not insignificant number of people.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a romance novel with two people in it, the chances that one of them has an STI is actually greater than 1 in 5. It's like half, it's half that, 1 in 2.5. Right.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not really good at statistics. It's probably
good
a little
at numbers at all. But
it's
sure.
a little bit more complicated than that, but it's less than 1 in 5. Say you have 10 people and two of them, because 1 in 5, so two of them have an STI. What is the likelihood that a relationship among those people will have at least one person with an STI? Again, I don't know probability. I never gamble. So I don't know, but somebody could probably do that math. Not me. And here's why this whole conversation matters, right? We think we understand why this matters because, oh, there should be positive representations and like we should destigmatize and blah, 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 blah. But what does the data say, Jody? What does the data say? So
this says we're all shitty.
Yeah, it does. So, exactly. This research also did then two other studies with people. And one of them was they got a whole bunch of readers. I want to say they were all identified as women. And they were like, what are you interested in reading? And then they asked them questions about how frequently they were to have used condoms in the past. And then what they did is they compared people who said that they read a lot of romance novels compared to people who read other things. And predictably found that they had hypothesized this. They found that people who had read romance novels were less likely in the past to have used condoms. And so they said, okay, we should do another study because it's unclear what if people who have more quote unquote traditional values are more likely to read romance novels. We can't quite narrow down exactly what's going on here. So then they did this other study where they took participants from the first study who said that they were willing to do more research, and they took an actual romance novel and had them read this scene, and half the people got the scene without mention of a condom and half of the people got the scene that included this paragraph. He pulled back slightly so he could look at her. "Should we use protection?" he asked gently. She nodded at him, her face warm, as he unwrapped the bright foil. Pleased with his concern for her, she smiled at him and kissed his throat, etc.
Okay.
And so
pleased with his concern for her. Yeah, okay.
That paragraph was written by researchers. So the purpose of this latter study is then to measure the impact of having read that on their attitudes towards using condoms. So if they read within a loving scene a description of a couple engaging in safe sex, according to this definition, has their attitude changed positively or negatively towards using condoms? And so, as predicted, participants who read the safe sex romance excerpt reported significantly more positive attitudes towards condom usage than participants who read the quote-unquote traditional romance script excerpt, which was the one without talking about condoms. Participants who read the safe sex scenario also reported less negative attitudes towards condom use.
This is really good, but it's so interesting to me because now I just have so many questions. You said these studies are probably around 1996, which obviously I was 2 years old. But my first thought was, I wonder if romance readers of today who are around the same age as these participants would have been then have the same views. And I'm like, because maybe we've come farther. But I'm like, 1996 would have been height of used condom ads on trains and stuff.
Definitely would be after, and there's mention of that in here. People are aware of the HIV crisis at this point.
Right.
And it's also clear, I think, at this point that unlike early conversation about HIV, that it is known that heterosexual people are equally at risk for HIV. And that information, I believe, is like pretty well distributed in media.
Right. They're at that point where there are like sitcom episodes
right.
where there's, so I'm like, I don't know. That seems like they would have had pretty intense sort of condom messaging.
Yeah. I've done a fair amount of reading on other studies on the impact of fictional narratives on people's beliefs about real life. Mm-hmm. And there's been many studies done that show that when people consume information, even if it's like in a fictional form, while they're able to say, I know that that was fiction, when they learn information in a medium, their brain isn't like, well, you learned that in fiction though, so you don't believe that. People's brains are like, that's fact. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Like, and it files it away. And so I don't know if it's a huge leap to really say, and this study is one study that shows this, But I don't think it's a huge leap to say if a reader of romance is repeatedly reading a script that in cisgender heterosexual relationships, a passive female, when it comes to these conversations, very little mention of condom usage, which either implies through its erasure or literally implies on the page that we don't need to use condoms or STI prevention because we're in love, because right. this is true love, because we don't want anything between us. There's a lot of like narrative wrapping around that, that I think it is reasonable for people's brain to say, if I have true love, then I don't need to worry about this.
Yeah.
Or this is going to spoil the mood if I'm like, hey, do you have a condom? Because, yeah. I don't want to look too forward. And they talk about this in the study, the negative social repercussions for being seen, particularly for like women, as too sexually forward. Oh right. no, like now this guy is going to think that I'm a trollop.
Right. A trollop. Yeah, a trollop. He's going to say that verbatim. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree fully. Those ideas exist in romance, but they very much also exist outside of it.
Sure.
It may not be our boss who we've been like secretly pining after for a year, that sort of thing. But I do think when you think about like your relationships, if you have been using safe sex, there comes a time when it's like, I love you. And so because of that, we can take steps to maybe not use condoms anymore. And that doesn't necessarily mean we got married. I think there is normally the perception of monogamy, whether or not that is actually happening is who knows. I think romance reinforces that for a lot of us. But I think that ultimately as a society that like we have really fucked up views on sex and relationship are how we view love and what it means to be in love is bizarre and very unforgiving to like actual human beings. Yeah. So I think it's all that shit like mashed together, and plenty of people who are doing things within the romance genre that are transformative, that are like way ahead of what the rest of, like, somebody's like, oh, she included like people reading STI results, okay, thanks, you know what I mean, like we're doing like real shit over here, and that's totally fine. So I don't want to say romance isn't doing that. I will say like mainstream, especially like traditionally published large romance, is absolutely reinforcing those ideas of, you know, love conquers all, love conquers herpes, love conquers a pregnancy that you're not ready for.
Well, you know? Love makes you ready.
Yeah, love. yeah, love makes you ready.
As somebody who has had a child, that's a joke.
As someone who has been in love and has not had a child, I also believe that is very much likely a joke. Yeah, even someone who's my age, who's 26, I know plenty of people who are married who are my age.
I was married at your age.
Were you really? That's so cute.
Yeah, I got married when I was 24.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Far be it from me to defend the romance genre, please.
Don't you dare.
I'm not going to do that. But I will say is that I think we are just following the lead of kind of what everyone is doing in real life for once, which is truly and actively kind of believing hashtag all you need is love, that bullshit. And I do think that we kind of amplify it and make it a little more intense than it often is in real life. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be striving to do better, because we should, but I don't know.
Do you want to hear the result of this poll? This
other
poll? Okay. So this poll has been open for, I don't know, 2 hours. We've got a stunning 44 votes, almost as much as the other one that was open for 2 days. I feel such shame about the response rate.
We're shaming the Shelf Love followers, y'all.
Y'all, why did you not take my poll?
Y'all.
Okay, so this is the question. What source of info was most influential on your ideas about safe sex? There's only 4 options, okay? So do with that what you will. Sex ed in school, 11.4%. Parents/guardians at just about 16%. At just over 27%, peers and friends. And then the most influential among my audience of people who read a lot of romance novels, perhaps unsurprisingly, media, including romance novels, at 45.5%.
Wow. Which actually makes sense. Anyone who said they got most of their sex ed from school, you're a Yank. Or
Californian?
Yeah, you're something. Like a Californian.
So Katrina Jackson, here, people commented on this, so... I know. Katrina Jackson said, "This is such a great question. I chose peers/friends, but I also learned a lot from media, specifically media aimed at gay men, which was always at the forefront of safe sex ed. Now I'm like super curious what, tell me more about this media."
This isn't shady. I think this very much has to do with age.
Are you calling her old?
I'm not. I am saying that.
There's nothing wrong with being old.
No, there isn't. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine when you were at this age, coming of age, when the majority of your sex ed was geared towards gay men, it was during the AIDS, HIV epidemic, do you think? In the 90s as a kid, the late 80s or 90s as a kid, you don't think? Because I was born in 94. So, okay, sorry, but I was.
It's okay. So, no, like, it's okay. Okay, so Hannah Hart's romance says, "For purposes of the current question," Hannah always is like, "But what if there was an essay response section to your polls?" She said, "I said school. I was lucky enough to have pretty comprehensive sex ed in high school, but I also counted college because they were serious about condoms." That's true. That at a certain time period, colleges got like very into that. I think because they didn't want to deal with like angry parents. However, consent was often left out of safe sex discussions, except maybe on the most basic level. Good point, Hannah.
Yes, absolutely. I knew no means no. I knew a very sort of basic definition of what assault was.
But the nuance probably.
Yeah, the nuance did not. I mean, that was a Tumblr discussion. You know what I mean? Which is dark, but it was. So, yeah.
So Raid says, "Weirdly learned the most about safe sex from peers in an abstinence education program I was a part of in high school, where I taught middle school kids how to say no to sex." Sad face. I mean, maybe those repressive sort of situations make people band together to be like, look, they're not going to give us any real information here. We've got to learn from each other. And then Deanna Fallar, who's going to be a guest on the podcast coming up. I know her from like over a decade ago, our school days at Emerson College. I'll tell the story when she comes by. But anyways, she says, "Rolling on the floor laughing at sex ed in school." I want to say she went to high school in Connecticut. Where did she go to school?
Have comprehensive sex ed?
Do WASPs? It's very much clutch your pearls. You know what? I also just want to clear up the misconception that everybody who lives in New England is a WASP. Like, I, first of all, am not a WASP. I am white.
And you're not a Protestant.
I'm not a Protestant. I guess I'm like half, I guess, Anglo-Saxon, but then I'm like half like Slavic. Is that so white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant?
Girl. Listen,
I don't even have pearls.
If I got to grow up hearing about how all of us like fuck our cousins, like shit like that, I'm gonna call y'all a WASP and I'm not gonna feel a tad bit bad about it. But I will recognize that my friend Andrea is not a WASP. She is a half Slavic Catholic or former lapsed, whatever, ex.
Do you know what white atheist potato farming?
Not potato farming.
I think literally every single one of my European ancestors was a potato farmer, but like in various countries. Like my Irish potato farmers, my Polish potato farmer kin.
What does that say about who you are today?
I hate potatoes.
Excuse me?
Do you know I love a good mashed cauliflower? Jody's vomiting.
I'm hanging up.
I did have steak frites for dinner tonight, so I guess I had potatoes tonight, yeah. Literally.
I'm so sorry. All right, I guess. I don't like seafood, so.
What'd you say?
I don't like seafood.
Oh, you don't like, I thought you said, I don't see food, like the way people say, I don't see color.
I don't see food, it's all the same.
It's all the same to me. Oh. I just put it in my mouth. And eat it, and I don't taste it.
It can be green, purple, polka dotted, fuzzy.
But sometimes when certain food is on my plate, I just push it away. I just don't know why.
I just don't even let it on the table.
Exactly. I think we ripped this foil packet right open. With our teeth?
Ripped a foil packet open with our teeth, which meant that the nut that we cracked open busted through the foil.
Yes, busted through the foil. Thus, we put two condoms on to be safer. Just in case any youngins are listening to this, although, God, you probably need more parental supervision
if any youngins are listening to this, I'm so sorry that I maybe made you Google the word bareback. I'm so sorry.
That any youngins listening to this are precocious enough to already know. If you're going to use a condom, use one, not one. Two. Don't ever
open
double
it
up.
With any teeth.
No teeth, ever. No knives, nothing sharp.
There's a little...
It's perforated. There's a little jagged edge where you tear.
Okay, wait. I have to share something ridiculous. I had an encounter once where the perforation, like, wasn't working. And the guy was like, oh, I have a lighter here. I can
burn. Oh, my God.
Burn.
What?
And I was like...
Jody, tell me you did not continue this encounter.
Okay, I did, but we didn't use that.
Thank God. I was worried about you.
Yeah, that was dark.
Jody, any final thoughts on this topic?
Babes, be safe. Have fun. Like, in these COVIDian times, be safe. I don't know. Just, like,
be
whatever.
Cool,
like,
baby girl.
Free. Be cool, baby. But also, take a more critical look. Maybe we should all start being better at including more comprehensive talks about safer sex in our romances. Yeah.
I thought that maybe at some point in this conversation, we would get to a somewhat prescriptive conversation about what are some things that you can just, like, casually throw in there to be a little bit more positive about safe sex conversations. We didn't get there. And that's okay. That's okay. I don't want to be too prescriptive. But I think, yes, Jody, I appreciate you ending on the food for thought. Are you doing what you're doing because it's what you have grown up reading in romance novels?
Yeah.
Or is it because this is truly the decision the characters make in the situation that makes sense in the story? And maybe we can open our minds about what is a sexy conversation.
Yeah. I also think that, just to add another thing, I know that when we're writing romance, erotica, or sex, a lot of us feel a ton of pressure to make everything sexy. And I spent a lot of time in To Be Alone With You wondering how I was going to make that scene where they do take a look at each other's test results sexy. And then I realized that I didn't have to do that, because if you've had sexual encounters in real life, you realize that a person saying they could burn open a condom isn't sexy. Mm-hmm. But the sex did still happen. And so I do think it's not always going to ruin the mood to just have people be like,
I guess I just want to say also, this is making me think that maybe all these conversations should not take place in the context of a sexual encounter. Like, it's okay for these conversations to happen beforehand or before the action gets hot and heavy.
Yeah. Okay. Elaine from Seinfeld, hot and heavy.
Listen, I will do the Elaine dance right now.
I believe you.
It's my actual dance.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great point. Like, you can have them talk about it over dinner. Like, I think it's, like, fine for them to be, like, if they're flirting or they realize that, you know what, maybe this is going to go to a place where we're going to have sex, it is perfectly acceptable to have one or multiple characters bring up, hey, in case this happens, let's discuss, like, how many partners do you have right now? And do you use protection with them? Or have you been tested recently? Mm-hmm. I also think that it can be intimate, and not intimate to mean sexual, but an intimate thing to have characters, like, go get tested together. It
Ooh,
can be
yeah, I like
kind
that.
Of like, you and Coy, there is a movie, I can't remember what it's called right now, but it's a Jenny Slate movie where there's a very tender scene at the end.
The one where she has the abortion.
Yes. And the hero, I guess you would call him, is there when she gets the abortion. And I found it very endearing and very tender and very intimate. And I don't see any reason why we couldn't do that with people who go to a clinic or to get an abortion, or people who go to a clinic to get an STI panel.
Or Plan B. There's so many possibilities there that you can play with. So it is a great scene. It's a bonding scene. It's an opportunity for them to spend time together and also to hold off on actually having sex to increase the tension. Like, they really, they're really looking forward to it and build the sexual tension in that scene. And also, if you think about what individual characters would do in particular situations, like, that is a fascinating thought experiment. There are so many characters in romance novels where I'm like, oh, they would totally be all up in that and have that on their calendar and schedule it for the other person and whatever. Like,
100%.
That is a character building exercise.
I think so too. A few scenarios just ran through my head about two people going to get a plan B after an encounter. And I'm like, oh wait, this is the cutest shit. Cause I'm imagining
like a broken condom or something.
Yeah.
And because that's like a thing that happens where like you're engaging in safe sex and something happens and you're like, okay, now I'm going to continue with the trend and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just open our minds a little more. And I also think, obviously, we're not, like, as I said earlier, as I just opened myself up far too much for you people and said that, like, I do have my own personal kinks or whatever. And so I'm definitely not saying just for my own enjoyment. I'm not saying let's never have any hashtag barebacking, which is, I guess, the word of this podcast.
Barebacking can be safe. It can be.
Yeah. So, yeah. You got to have me and Jack Hartman on here to talk about breeding kinks.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. Writing that down. Breeding. No. Hey. I can't tell. Jody, I can never tell who's corrupting whom when we get together.
I might be corrupting you a little bit.
That's just because you think that I look innocent.
You just have such a sweet little face.
I'm fooling all of you.
I mean,
Jody, thank you so much for coming today to unravel the mysteries of the universe with me.
I regret this 100%. No, but thank you for having me.
At least you don't regret it 200%.
You nerd!
Thanks for listening to episode 87 of Shelf Love, and thank you to Jody Slaughter for joining me. Thanks to everyone who also took part in these Twitter surveys as well. I love to hear your ideas. A transcript and show notes for this episode can be found on shelflovepodcast.com. Next week, I'm joined by rare book dealer Rebecca Romney. She's building a romance collection. She's building it bigger. She's widening the corridors and adding more lanes for romance scholarship. A very limited edition. Some people want Harlequin, some people want Mills and Boone. You'll hear our conversation about it very, very soon. If you know what song I'm playing on here, please send me an email and I'll send you a pendant keychain. But seriously, I'm really excited for you to hear our conversation, and I think that Rebecca's work has lots of cool implications for widening our understanding of the history of the genre. So stay tuned for that next week. If you have any thoughts on today's show, I'd love for you to reach out to me. You can send an email to Andrea@shelflovepodcast.com. I also appreciate if you take a moment to give this podcast some stars, preferably as many as possible, on Apple Podcasts, or if you leave a review. Even better yet, share this podcast with a friend. Depending on your friends, this may or may not be the best one to start with. Use your judgment. I trust you, sweetie. This episode is produced by me, Andrea Martucci. Thank you to Shelf Love's editorial advisory board members, Katrina Jackson and Tasha L. Harrison. That's all for this week. Black Lives Matter. Stay safe, stay mad, and keep reading romance.
The only turtleneck I own, I'm going to wear tomorrow actually, is a bodysuit turtleneck. It's like...
I sewed a bodysuit turtleneck for myself, and I wear it underneath my dungarees.
That's what I'm wearing. That's the outfit I'm wearing tomorrow under my pink dungarees.
I almost wore my dungarees for this, but I didn't have time.
Oh my God, I did too.
Let's choose a day to both wear our dungarees and then take pictures on Instagram and then swap them.
We're going to.
Okay, I love it. Action.
you wanna get.